3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Hello and welcome to the International Women's Day live breakfast. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people and Bunurong people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners and custodians of this land upon which we live and work. Sovereignty was never ceded. And with me in studio, so this is like all powers combined, you know. We've got Dai from Wednesday Breakfast, we've got Lalitha from Friday Breakfast, and of course, my partner in crime, Ayan from Tuesday Breakfast. How is everybody?
We're good. We're good.
Very good.
Yeah, and of course, we have in studio live audience members. Thank you, everybody, for coming in. And we've got our panelists as well, who we'll hear from. We've got in studio Pillar Dai. We've got Idol, we've got Margarita, and we've got DJ Miss Risk, and on the phone later on we'll have Paola Bella. And also very special for you today, all of our music will be played by Whiskey Houston. Whiskey has a reputation for erupting parties into euphoric sweaty messes, traversing genres from disco, house, soul, club, classics, new wave, and synth pop to stoke up a late night on the tiles. By day, Whiskey is also an advocate for better treatment and representation of marginalized people in the music industry through the grassroots movement Listen. So we've got a whole bunch of amazing people today, and I guess we'll kick it through to Whiskey to get us started with a bit of music, and looking forward to the great show. Whiskey Houston giving us ESG, You're No Good. There's actually a lot of things happening today and this week as part of, you know, not only International Women's Day, but really amazing things, and I just want to let you know about them. First is the Women's Rights at Work Festival, which is still happening, so you can catch some of those amazing sort of panels as part of the Women's Rights at Work Festival. And to find out details and RSVP, please visit unionwomen.org.au. And another one is a call out looking for young Muslim women who are between 15 and 25 years old, have a passion for radio or podcasts, and are interested in human rights issues. So 3CR is having a 5-day intensive training program from the 3rd to the 7th of April from 10 till 3 p.m. And so if you want to know more, you can email your application to youngwomen@muslimwomencenter.org.au. Applications close on the 20th of March, or you can call 9481 3000 and ask to speak to Munira. And of course, today there's the rally, which will be covered. If you kind of tune into 3CR and you can't make the rally, it's going to be covered by, I think, Tan Hang from Queering the Air. And so that's later on today. They'll be covering the front of Parliament steps. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Join the International Women's Day Rally on Wednesday, the 8th of March at 5:30 p.m, starting at Parliament House and finishing at Trades Hall for an after-party. International Women's Day sparked the Russian Revolution 100 years ago, and in honour and memory of our sisters then who took strike action over bread, we raise the demand, peace, bread and land. Join us for the IWD rally on Wednesday, March the 8th at 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Contact the women's team at Trades Hall for more details or visit unionwomen.org.au. The IWD Collective, Victoria Trades Hall Council and the Trades Hall women's team are 3CR supporters. Come celebrate the collective achievements of working women, past, present and future, at the Women's Rights at Work Festival, March 1 through 9. Events include Feminist Book Club, the Rock and Frock Scala, Breakfast with Anne Summers, Feminist Politics in the Pub, a Women's Footy Clinic, Feminist Activist Skills Workshops and a conference to stop gendered violence in the workplace. Also join us for the International Women's Day Rally, 5:30pm on March 8. Contact the women's team at Trades Hall or visit unionwomen.org.au for more details. Victoria Trades Hall Council and the Victorian Trades Hall Women's Team are 3CR supporters.
So we'll get straight into our first panellist. Our first panellist is Margarita Vindich. Margarita currently teaches community services and social work at Victoria University. Long-term feminist and social justice campaigner with a very keen interest in climate change and its disproportionate impact on vulnerable population groups. Margarita is also a member of Socialist Alliance. Hello, Margarita. How are you?
Good morning. Happy International Women's Day, everybody.
Yes, happy International Women's Day. It's Dalita here, folks. Margarita, you are a strong feminist. Do you want to tell us more about yourself? What made you become a strong feminist?
I guess the world made me become a strong feminist. I've born into a patriarchal, unequal system, and I guess I just thought I deserve better. And I also grew up in a family where my father would never say he's a feminist, but I really think he was. And he always said that, you know, there is no reason why girls should be treated any differently to boys. And I'm talking even a small country town, you know, Catholic background. And that always sticks with me. And then I guess I went to study at university in Vienna when I was 18 and bumped into a few rallies, as you do when you start going to uni. And I just thought that's fantastic. And then I ran away from Austria to greener
Austria
pastures.
Is where you come from, Margarita, yes.
Yeah, from Austria, and ended up in Australia. And a couple of years after I arrived here, I actually got involved in International Women's Day Collective, and that was really the beginning of my activism in Australia, and that's now about 24 years ago.
Wow. That's a long time.
Wow. Congrats.
Yes. You too.
Margarita, given your worldview, and as a Socialist Alliance spokesperson, can you expand on your views around the rise of the conservative right in Australia, especially through supposedly bold female figures such as Pauline Hanson, who have been hailed by some as a feminist? Do we even want to equate positive concepts such as boldness and feminism with that of the far right?
Look, I think everybody can be bold. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily good people, yeah, or people that we necessarily want to promote. The rise of the far right, in my opinion, is very much related with the inability of social democracy to actually deliver to people. A lot of people have seen in Australia and across the world that their conditions have actually worsened in a system that keeps saying things are okay. And for me, the rise of the far right actually is more, I would say, an indication also that the social democracy, which is represented in one way or another through the ALP, has actually not been able to show a real alternative. And nowadays, when people say any woman can be a feminist, you know, it's like if I say I'm a feminist, that makes me a feminist. And I think that actually betrays the real principles of feminism, what a lot of women always fought for, which was not really equality in a system that actually allows men to act like beasts. Mm. If that's the system we want to assimilate into, then I think we're aiming far too low. Mm. Feminism, in my view, has always been about women's liberation, and that requires systems change. So it's not a lifestyle choice. It's not to say I choose what I want to do that makes me a feminist. And, you know, anybody's heard Pauline Hanson speak would very much be aware that she really does not care about 99% of the world's women. And that means, you know, Indigenous women, Muslim women, Black women, Asian women, and any woman, for instance, who wants to have an abortion, or any woman who's a single parent. Yeah, she's actually really anti-women. And that's not feminist.
Right. Maya Angelou once said, "I've learned that you shouldn't go through life with a catcher's mitt on both hands. You need to be able to throw something back." What are your thoughts on boldness? How can change be achieved?
Well, everything we take for granted, I think, in 2017, and there's a lot of women and young women also, especially in Australia, take a lot of things for granted. And I think they should be able to, because it should be our birthright to be able to go to university, to be able to have autonomy over my own body, to decide, you know, who I want to live with, who I want to sleep with, how many children I want to have, or any at all, what career I want to have. However, though, all of these we have only achieved because of the incredible determination and courage of the women who've come before us. Yes. Women have died in the struggle for liberation. And I'm talking about abolitionists, about women who are fighting against slavery, against the horrendous invasion of Australia. Women have been fighting against their attacks on reproductive rights. And we still see women die now also in Rojava in Kurdistan, where the women actually are part of a massive liberation struggle that want to see a different world. So in other words, I think boldness has to go just beyond me and has to be about what do I want to achieve for also the people around me. And I guess that means often sacrifice, and it means courage. And we shouldn't forget that courage is actually contagious. You know, when we see one or two people stand up and speak out, it actually gives real encouragement to others. Because we know my voice alone is not going to be enough. But when we have more and more voices and different voices that come from different kind of angles, but we all are striving for the same thing, which is really freedom for all humans to be able to fulfill their potential. That's when we know we have power, and that's when we're dangerous. And really, at the end of the day, I just want to say to you, you know, there's the old saying, good girls go to heaven, bad girls go everywhere. And I think that really should be a bit of our inspiration.
We should all have new bad girls,
that's
shouldn't
well said.
We?
Yeah.
Margarita, what are, in your eyes, the biggest challenges for womankind in Australia and across the world for 2017?
If I can just say it in one phrase, it would be corporate globalization. I think that's the biggest challenge. And the elements of that, I would argue, are violence against women, and that's expressed through literal wars that are being fought, you know, and we're talking about the Middle East, we're talking still about Palestine, you know, literal, you know, wars of invasion, but also proxy wars. Then also the ongoing violence perpetrated by governments against particular population groups and women. And here we also talk about, you know, high rates of incarceration and murder of people from different ethnic and minority communities. That's violence. And then also, of course, the intimate partner violence that a lot of women experience. And, you know, at least one woman gets murdered every week in Australia by either a partner or ex-partner. And, you know, that is savage, you know, that kind of violence that women have to face from the state, from society, and then the people that supposedly love them. That's one of the, I would say, one of the most savage forms of women's oppression. And I think it's a key element of corporate globalization. The other one is increase of wage inequality and also increase of poverty. We now have 8 men who own as much as half of the world's population. Now let that sink in. 8 men own as much as 3.6 billion people. I mean, that level of poverty has not existed ever before. And this affects, of course, women, because we women statistically are the poorest in the world. We're the most illiterate, and women cop the biggest brunt of that. Also precarious employment. You know, we're talking part-time employment, casualization. Women have a higher percentage of that. We earn less super over the years. It means we are poorer when we get old. One of the biggest growing population groups in homelessness are older women. So that's a massive challenge. Another very big challenge is climate change, yeah? This is a massive crisis. It's the biggest threat to global health in the world. And again, women are some of the first to really experience at the forefront of climate change. Any disaster, women are some of the higher percentage of women who die in disasters. We also talk about, land theft, yeah, that's happening. Ongoing theft of land through colonial occupations, but also current occupations. You know, we see what's happening in Indigenous Australia around, you know, like the whole question of not being able to have a treaty in sovereignty. But we also see people in Western Sahara still being occupied, Palestine, you know. So I think they're key issues. And coming out of that, all of that, we then have forced migration from all these different issues, you know. So the whole crisis around people having to leave their countries, you know, becoming refugees and asylum seekers, and then what happens to them when they try and reach safety, like Europe or Australia. They get, you know, experience more violence again from a patriarchal system. And I guess at the end, I would argue that the other big one is, of course, with a big challenge, is the rise of the far right, you know, which is really very big too, and challenging for women, because it's a direct attack on some of our civil liberties.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree with you, Margarita. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and speaking with us. That's a lot to for us all to think about, and maybe we can all come together and tackle some of those issues to you know, create some change. Yeah, thank you so much, Margarita.
Pleasure. Thank you. It's for feminism of the 99%. That's us.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in to 3CR Wednesday Breakfast. It's a special live breakfast for International Women's Day. We've got amazing panelists on. So you're with me, Hope, you're with Dai, you're with Dalitha, and you're with Ayan. And we've just spoken with our first panelist, Margarita Vindich, community services teacher and social worker at Vic Uni. And Margarita's just got such a long history of community development and community services work. And with us on the decks, we also have Whiskey Houston, and we'll just throw it to her for another tune. And that was another awesome track by Whiskey Houston, our live DJ in studio. And that was Heaven Knows by Jackie Graham. So our next panelist is DJ Miss Risk. DJ Miss Risk is a Melbourne-based DJ, block party curator, and radio presenter. Her name is Danielle Risk, and known in the music industry as Miss Risk. And has helped season Melbourne's rich music culture over the last 10 years, propelling local artists onto a larger platform through her weekly Urban Fervour show on Kiss FM and by rocking special events and club nights as support DJ for esteemed local and international artists. Hey, Ms. Risks, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Happy day, happy day.
Hey.
Happy International Women's Day.
Thank you.
I'm of the older generation, not very familiar with your kind of music, Danielle. So enlighten me. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I play many genres of music that spans many decades. You know, one of my favorite genres is jazz. So, you know,
nice.
That began early 1900s, of course, and been DJing since 2001, but was able to forge a full-time career in music about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. So it's been a long time of hard work and being bold and being a bit determined. And today I'm quite, for my idea of what success is, I feel like I'm getting there. And I really, really enjoy being based in Melbourne, because Melbourne provides me with so many opportunities to provide others with opportunities and to share a lot of the music that I play, which is hip-hop is the foundation. But, of course, if we look under the roots of hip-hop, it's jazz, disco, funk, soul, boogie. So I do play many genres across many genres, house music. Yeah.
So you work in what would be considered the fun side of life, but it comes with its own dark side. Tell us about this and how it's affected Boldness for Change.
Well, if we look at the music industry as a whole, I mean, I know people probably say that I'm a cynic, but a lot of the time it for women and for those in the intersections, it's quite darker than it is joyous at the moment, and has been for a long time. That being said, it is getting better very slowly. We are seeing slight change, and I think that's with a lot of people becoming a bit more bold and speaking up and calling out things that need to be called out. And so despite all of that, it's kind of nice to have the fun element. It's like, hey, we're angry, but we're dancing.
That sounds good.
So there's a lot of 50-50 there. And, you know, sometimes some nights are better than others, and some parts of the industry and some people in the industry are a lot better than others. But I think it's a slow change. But I think we are moving forward, definitely in the terms of music and clubs and parties, that's for sure.
On that, with the advent of party culture being impacted by sexual assault and harassment, usually committed by men against women, you know, it recalls an almost primitive era, but it's now 2017. So when do you think we'll ever achieve gender parity and a party environment safe from sexual predators?
Okay, so my real life answer is not one while I'm alive. That's the truth of it. Unfortunately, there is a system that's been built in place, as Margaret touched on earlier, and this system, this patriarchic system, for many, 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 many thousands, hundreds, billions of years even, maybe even in the dinosaur ages where it possibly began, that, you know, this patriarchal system has started and it's filtered through many industries. And unfortunately, when it comes to sexual harassment and women up in the club having a good time, most of the time everyone's cool, but every now and again, and quite often, there are those situations which are uncomfortable and unsavory. And I guess it's very hard to monitor people's behavior, but if there's one thing I noticed, and something that I do try when I'm running events, if I do notice something, for example, there was a situation where I was running a party, and I'll just personalize this a bit so you can get a bit of context about how I tackle these things. So I was at a party, that one of my club events, and someone kicked me in the butt, and I just turned around and just saw a row of men, and I said, this is perfect. So instead of trying to work out which man did it, I made security remove every single one in that line, and one of them said to me, I didn't do anything. I'm like, no, but you allowed it to happen, and you didn't do anything about it, so off you go with your mates, have a good time. And I think it's really important to make everyone responsible for that kind of behavior. I mean, the issue is, a lot of the time, it's even online, when you see online harassment and things like that, you know, it's not just one person. You know, there's always one person and a whole bunch of people agreeing or motivating this other person. And it's just this cycle of, what is wrong with you people? Like, why? Why? Why can't you just be respectful? At what point in your life did you decide that you could do whatever you want, however you wanted, regardless of other people's feelings? And you know, this is something that we tackle, and think, yeah, Whiskey is probably an amazing person to speak with in regards to those spaces. I mean, her work is quite amazing in that. And so, you know, that revolution has begun. But my point to everyone on International Women's Day or International People's Day is, when you are in nightclubs and you are at parties, I mean, you could, you know, even if it's a regular event you go to all the time, you can't monitor and you can't judge the people that walk in. You don't know what's going to happen, if it's going to happen. And I'm really, really hoping very soon that the onus is on the people, the perpetrators, and not so much the women, you know, depending on how we're dressed or how we acted or how many drinks. I mean, I can't understand how certain people can go around behaving however they feel like it, and not be reprimanded for it. And so the victim is always placed on us. Like, how much do women have to carry, really? We're a bit tired now, but we're still pushing. You know, we're tired, but we're not tired. Don't worry. You know.
And what's an excellent party song for all the women out there on International Women's Day?
I'm Every Woman, Chaka Khan. There's lots. There's that. We have Queen Latifah, Ladies First. There's a lot of music that comes to mind. Just, yeah, anything by Badu, you've got Salt and Pepper. There's so many party tracks to play by amazing women. Diana Ross, The Boss. Mm. Like, come on,
my genre.
So many. That means you'll definitely love my parties and whiskey. So, you know, AJ, nothing but a number, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ms. Risk. Really appreciate your time. And for people listening, Ms. Risk and and whiskey are actually part of a concert tonight. It's called Unity International Women's Day Concert, and it's part of the Brunswick Music Festival, and it's a celebration of women. And Brunswick Music Festival presents a special concert in honor of this day with an incredible lineup of vocalists and spoken word artists, including Kylie Aldist, Ajak Kwai, Emily Wiramara, Parvin, Chelsea Wilson, Sahida Aspara, and Janam Kaur, and accompanied by a specially commissioned orchestra led by composer, arranger, and bassist Tamara Murphy. It's going to be an excellent show, and Unity will also be Auslan interpreted, so that's going to be really great. And so if you're just joining in on 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, we've just spoken with Miss Risk. Miss Risk is a Melbourne-based DJ, block party curator, and radio presenter. And International Women's Day is going really well. And we've got our live DJ, Whiskey Houston, who's going to spin us another track. And that was the Boys Town Gang with Ain't No Mountain High Enough. And you're with us here on Wednesday Breakfast. I keep saying Tuesday, but it's Wednesday. and it's a very special day indeed. It's International Women's Day, and we're having a great time here in studio with our live studio audience members. Thank you so much for being here. We've joined forces, the breakfast teams. We've got Lalitha from Friday Breakfast, we've got Di from Wednesday Breakfast, and of course myself, Hope, with Ayan from Tuesday Breakfast. And I'm just going to read out a few more announcements before we kick into the next panel. I just want to say that today Lalitha has brought to my attention there's an early education, there's an action by early education workers taking strike action today at 10:30 a.m. You can contact your local childcare for more information. And of course, this is important today because a lot of educator roles, and especially early education, a lot of women work in these roles and very much underpaid. So it's very important to go and support this. And tomorrow, the 9th of March at 10:30 a.m., there's also a there's a march at Trades Hall. So it's tomorrow at Victorian Trades Hall. And again, it's really important to support workers and workers' rights, you know, especially with everything that Margarita was saying about the top eight richest people being men. I also actually came
probably
across
white.
Actually, sorry.
I had to put
and
that
straight.
In.
And straight.
Yeah. Actually came across another statistic that in Australia, most companies, you'll find more companies with a CEO named Peter than you will female female CEOs. So that's another thing. But anyway, Hope's trivia for the day is done. We're going to jump straight into our next panelist.
Women could be called Peter too.
Our next panelists, we're speaking with two people. We have Pillar Darling, an opinionated queer non-binary trans being. They're an activist, artist, maker, curator, speaker, and real-life doll dork. Pillar draws inspiration primarily through unconventional set of life experiences. Their work responds to societal reactions of their existence and is a tool to examine, process, and unlearn trauma, and seeks to expose joy in an otherwise hostile environment. They've spoken on numerous panels discussing their own experience and whether safe spaces for queer people is a myth. Our next panelist is Idil Ali, interviewed last year on Wednesday Breakfast about Voice Fest 2016. At the time of the interview, they worked as a youth peer leader at the Drum Youth Services. So thank you so much for joining us, Pillar and Idil.
Hello.
And I guess my first question for you both is just to tell us a little bit about yourselves. I guess we'll, whoever wants to go first.
So my name is Idil Ali. I'm 20, black, Muslim, and a woman in that order. I think I'm a youth worker, so I work at Drum Street Youth Services. I work with young people often in my community, so in the Carlton Housing Residence. I'm a part of the Youth Activist Series for Plan International, that's centred around making public spaces safer for women. And I also am part of the advocacy team at RISE, Refugees, Survivors and Ex-Detainees. So that's me.
I wish I went first now. You're so much more impressive. I'm Pilla. I'm a trans femme, non-binary person. I guess, like most women who are feminists and activists, you know, I came to it having to, I guess, stand up and fight for what I needed to have space and safety and respect. So I guess a lot of the work that I create responds to that. And I guess, you know, I a lot of people ask to talk on panels because they're educated through, you know, through formal education and stuff like that. But I guess a lot of other people, and it's nice to see a mix of people on the panel. And I fit into the other group of people that has just sort of slogged it out, you know. So yeah, I guess my greatest achievement so far is that I'm still here.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. The next question is about, I guess, identity, which is always a tricky one. And we don't want to fall into the sectarian attitude of identity politics, but we all have to identify ourselves and relate to that and live that life within that identity. You would have both different ways of interpreting your identity or identifying yourself. Perhaps Pilla, and then it'll want to tell us what does it feel like being you? How do you identify yourself? Real life stuff here.
Yeah, all right. How does it feel like being me? I mean, I don't know. How does it feel like? It feels different every day of the week, you know. I also live with chronic fatigue syndrome, so I guess I...
In terms of society, you know, how they perceive you and how you...
They have no idea how to perceive me. You know, I think in some ways... my transness is often invisibilized. A lot of people don't see me as trans unless I'm naked, you know. So, like, in lots of ways, it's hard because I struggle with the fact that my identity is not witnessed or recognized or acknowledged. And in other ways, I'm also really aware that because I'm often read as male, I'm often safer, and that's horrible. It's horrible to, you know, I guess sometimes I have to choose between looking how I would rather look and safety. Yeah, so I guess how society perceives me depends on how courageous I'm feeling that day. You know,
do you allow society to interpret how you identify yourself, or do you push through with how you feel as you are?
As I said, I live with chronic fatigue, so I stand up when I can and I lie the hell down when I need to. Mm-hmm.
Sure, you pick your fights.
Yeah, I pick my fights.
Yep. That's good.
Yeah, great. I think there's lots of ways to challenge people's notions of what a person is, you know. Yeah. Some of my new sort of softer tactics of challenging people's identities of what a body looks like or what a woman looks like or is just, you know, maybe going down to the nude beach, you know. That always puts people in their place pretty quickly.
Sounds good.
Yeah, you know. I like to take the as much of the... I like to find creative ways of taking as much of the emotional labor off myself and onto the person who's perpetrating the violence against me.
It's good to challenge that binary view people, lot of people have, isn't it? It's interesting for them to think in a diverse perspective.
Yeah, and I actually feel like a lot of, you know, I mean, when you look at the queer movement or the GLBT movement, a lot of that fight back started with trans women. You know, well, it's the first brick was thrown by a trans woman of colour. Not that you'd see that in any Hollywood film.
A black trans woman.
Black trans woman, sorry. And, you know, so I think that often a lot of work is done by trans people and particularly black trans people. And obviously because they're probably the most persecuted, marginalized group in the world, you know, when you look at the statistics of murder and unemployment and things like that.
Udil?
So how I view myself, I guess, because I am a cis straight woman, so there's privilege that comes with that, but also when I introduced myself, I was said that I was a black Muslim woman in that order. And I think before I see myself as a woman, I see myself as a black person. Before I see myself as a Muslim, I see myself as a black person. Because I think that's the one, being black defines a lot of how I'm treated in spaces, how the social constructs makes it more difficult for me as a black person before it makes it more difficult for me as a Muslim person. Mm-hmm. And then both of those make it more difficult for me before being a woman. Mm-hmm. In terms of, I think, seeing myself as being, having to come to terms with the fact that I'm privileged in a sense, because women are the most marginalized group, but being a straight woman, being a cis woman, means that I have certain privileges that comes with that. There's certain safety that comes with being a cis woman because we're more palatable to men than, for example, trans black women would be. I think that's how. I think in terms of whether or not I let other people define how I perceive myself, not so much I perceive myself a certain way, but it does influence the way I navigate spaces.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good answer. I like that one.
So, Pilar, you touched on safety just a minute ago. I was just wondering if you could elaborate what your main concerns are around safety for the queer and trans community here in Melbourne, but also across Australia.
Well, again, what Idle was saying, you know, it's not, you know, like you... Yes, I'm a trans person, but I'm less visible, so I'm safer. You look at, like, the sister girls, they are often in far more difficult circumstances. It's that, marginalisation is the biggest issue. I think in Melbourne, inside the queer community, trans women are sort of in some ways held in quite high regard. We're almost at a point where we're even starting to be seen as desirable people within the queer community, and that's, you know, wow, like that's light years. When I first started to transition, I was 18, I'm now 34. It was a very, very, very different time back then, and the safety issues around what I faced then versus what I face now, you know, back then it was homelessness and a lot of, you know, like if you were a trans woman, you were a drug dealer or a sex worker and you were homeless, and there was no such thing as sex worker rights. There was no such things as, you know, like harm minimization around drug use and things like that. Like there are lots of communities in Australia that still really persecute trans women. So I think it's not just about trans women. It's about, like, none of us move forward until we all move forward, you know. Yeah. Everyone
Good
needs
point.
To look out for one another and stand up and take the space that we need. I don't know. I was at an event end of last year, which was mainly filled with cis gay men. And I experienced a lot of othering, a lot of, you know, misogyny, and I realized that I needed to play them at their own game, you know. I tried for the first few days to be like, excuse me, recognize me, excuse me. And then I just went, this. And I just was like, okay, well, this is my space. I'm taking this space. You can't have this space. I'm doing these things in my space, you know. And I think when women and when trans women get together and we say, this is our space, we're safer. There's safety in numbers and there's safety. There is something to be said for just, I guess, playing the same game, you know. Take the space that you want so that they can kind of recognize how horrible they're being, you know, when they go, oh, I don't like that. It's like, well, you just did it to me, so
yeah.
that's what it feels like, buddy.
Yeah.
But, like, not the same because they have all that privilege. Like.
Well, exactly. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's like it's whenever we have the opportunity to kind of go, no, actually, I'm not going to.
At the end of the day, they have hurt feelings, whereas you have, like, the systematic oppression. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm not saying that it's the thing that's going to fix it. I just think it's just one thing that I noticed was in that situation where it was the one thing that was the most effective at allowing them to witness what their behaviour actually looks like.
Being a mirror in front of them, it's really important.
Or possibly just being bold.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, the theme for the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm just going to throw to you now with a question. Referring to this Audre Lorde quote, I'll just read it out to you.
Yeah.
Our speaking out will irritate some people, get us called bitchy or hypersensitive, and disrupt some dinner parties. And then our speaking out will permit other women to speak until laws are changed and lives are saved and the world is altered forever. Next time, ask, what's the worst that will happen? Then push yourself a little further than you dare. Once you start to speak, people will yell at you. They will interrupt you, put you down, and suggest it's personal. And the world won't end. So that's a great quote. Ayan actually chose it. It's good. So just referring to that quote, do you think women are trapped in a prison of niceness and niceties? Do you think that they should be more bold?
I think most certainly we are trapped in a prison of niceties, and I think we should be more bold, but at what cost? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of women are in different situations to myself. I think me being bold comes from having a safety net, having women who support me, having networks. I think knowing that my repercussions are not going to be, like, if I say something and I don't get support, there's in that space, there's other spaces where I get support. I do have platforms. I'm on radio, so I do have platforms where I can speak up. Not every woman is in the same situation, and a lot of women have vulnerable situation, like circumstances that means that them speaking out isn't beneficial for them, not for the moment. It's like, for example, single mothers who are working, if they speak out and they lose their job, like, feminism isn't going to pay for their kids' food. Like, that's... It's not the same situation because they'll get fired, but the system still exists. Someone else is going to get hired in their place.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being bold. I think for me, like, I think it should be a whole systematic change. It's not like one person speaking up for themselves. It's all of us doing it together and people in places of privilege doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that although we love to talk about, like, all women standing up for each other, a lot of women in places of privilege, white women, they don't benefit from standing up for working class women, women of color, indigenous women, women who aren't able-bodied. Like, for them, it's not beneficial. So, and they're the ones that have the most influence to change things.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
At the same time, in saying that, I think for myself, like, often when I realize that I'm speaking out, I do come from groups that are marginalized. But I realize that the people who are the most marginalized are the people who create the most change, but they have the most to lose. So it's like, what can we do to support them?
Yep.
And I think that's part of being bold. Part of being bold isn't like trying to seek credit for what you do, is doing it for the right reasons. And that's for all of us to be better, for all of us to have the same, I wouldn't say not equality, but equity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important that... we're supporting women in the most vulnerable positions, and and keeping in mind all of the biases that we have and all the privileges that we have, because even though we're women, all of us have very different mm-hmm. circumstances.
Yeah. Thank you. That's good. This is an excellent answer.
The person who said that quote, aren't they the same person that said, your silence won't save you? Something along those lines.
Yeah, that yeah. silence won't save you.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Silence isn't going to save anybody.
Mm. Yeah, but the interesting thing in this that's, I guess, missing is being able to form coalitions with women who are privileged, who do have the power, mm-hmm. who are listened to, like the white women in the society have a much bigger slice of the privilege than all the marginalized women. And we cannot leave out the men either. There are lots of men who support women's rights because they have partners who are women, they've got children who are girls, and they do look to the future. And for me, unless we can form coalitions with all the people in society who support women's rights, rights of trans people, rights of gay people, the oppressed minorities, we're not going to win this battle. As you say, it's a systemic change we're looking for. Mm-hmm. I think that's something mm-hmm. we need to really keep up front. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's going to be a losing battle because the institutions are very good mm-hmm. and the experts are divide and rule. Mm-hmm. Refugee versus people who have settled here. Mm-hmm. Aboriginal people versus the invaders. It goes on and on mm-hmm. and on. So I think that's something we need to be completely aware of and keep in the forefront. It's a system that's got to change mm-hmm. to solve all these mm-hmm. problems.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have community, like without having white people as gatekeepers, yeah. having links between each other in the community yes. rather than having both of us giving false legitimacy to white people in government. Like absolutely. That's not who should be there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's also why people are so confronted by people who do sit at the intersections and yeah. people who and non-binary people,
yes.
Because it's like we are those people that bridge those gaps.
Yeah.
We are the people that stand in between the different communities that we belong to and say, hey, we're all marginalized. We, yeah. We're the handholders that yeah. bring people together. Mm. And that's
we're
why
dangerous.
We're dangerous.
Hey. And I think that's a good note to end on. We had one other question, but because we're short on time, and I feel
ask
like
it.
You
just
got, but I feel like
it.
You,
come on.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, well. I think you pretty much, both of you pretty much answered this question. So mainstream conversations about gender equality often center white, heterosexual, able-bodied women. Mm-hmm. How does this erasure impact the communities left out of this conversation?
Well, it impacts it in every single way. I mean, it's like, when we talk about, women get, 72 cents in the dollar versus men. It's like, well, you look at black women, look at disabled women, look at trans women. I mean, don't even bother looking at trans women. The statistics, I don't even know if we keep statistics on what trans women or black trans women earn. We're just more worried about keeping them alive at this point.
Yeah. Mm.
I think that when we focus on the economics, inequalities of white women. I mean, it's the same thing, I guess, where the LGBT community's like main focus is on gay marriage, same-sex marriage, and you've got, America trying to stop trans people going to the bathroom,
Yeah.
It's like we should be focused on the people most marginalized first. So mm-hmm. I guess that.
For me, I feel like the way I see it, like even talking about like feminism, like the last, not even the last couple of years, for a very long time, I've been shrinking away from that word because I use it in certain spaces, but in other spaces, like in spaces that are black, in spaces that are Muslim, I shrink away from that word because for me it has the connotations of like white women and their priorities being very different to my priorities.
Mm.
And for me, like, we'll talk about intersectional feminism, and for mainstream feminism, that's like a subgroup when it should be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, and that's just, like, very frustrating to think about because if I'm under the banner of feminism, I'm standing up for somebody who has so much more privilege than me. Women of colour, they're doing, like, working class women are doing all the hard work. They're doing the groundwork, and then other women get to benefit from it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's just not fair.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same thing that's going on.
Yeah, always.
Just supporting the same structures. But yeah.
Because if we're working within these structures, then it's never going to be complete change. It'll be like we're just lifting them up, but we're still under them, holding them, carrying all the weight.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And also normalizing their identity as well, and them being the default and everyone else is other. You do receive support or when other groups receive, assistance, they're not given the full the full gamut. Yeah,
it's always like we're being invited in when we're the ones doing the work. Why are we getting invited into something that we created?
We're
building the structures, and then they're like, oh, come in, do you want to open the door? And it's like, not even open the door, kind of open a little bit of a slit so we can see it, and then we force our way in. But we built that building, like that's
mm-hmm.
ours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, both of you, for speaking with us today. If you're just tuning in to 3CR Wednesday Breakfast, today is International Women's Day, and we've been speaking with Pilar Darling, an opinionated queer non-binary trans being who's an activist, curator, artist maker, real-life doll and dork. and we've also been speaking with Idil Ali. Idil works at Drummond Street Services, is a member of RISE, Refugee Survivors and Ex-Detainees, and youth activist leader. Idil is passionate for African and is a passionate advocate for African and Muslim communities. And so we've also got our live in studio DJ, Whiskey Houston. So we'll kick over to Whiskey for the next track while we line up our next interviewee, who's going to be over the phone.
Up next, we have Paola Bala. Paola Bala is a Wemba and Gunjumara woman of Italian and Chinese heritage. She's an artist, curator, speaker, educator, and cultural producer, having developed the Footscray Community Community Arts Centre's first Indigenous Arts and Cultural Program, and is a senior curator in First Peoples Exhibition, Melbourne Museum.
Hi, Paola, can you hear us?
Hi, if I can hear you.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Paola.
Oh, thank you. I'm very jealous. I wish I was in there with you.
So can you tell us about the exhibition that you're creating with Max Delaney?
Oh, about sovereignty?
Sovereignty, yes.
Yeah, sure. So, look, it's amazing. We've worked on it for a year. So it actually opened in December last year on the 16th. And we've only got a few weeks left now. So it closes on the 26th of March. But it's been absolutely epic, and I think the talk is that we had about 1,000 people at the opening night, which was just incredible.
Wow, that's impressive, hey.
And, we definitely turned Accra a little blacker, as I've been saying, because it's a very white, settler institution.
Hmm.
And so this exhibition, Sovereignty, of, over 30-plus First Nations artists was really the first time ACCA had platformed Aboriginal art in such a way. So it's been really significant for all of our artists. It's been significant for me as a curator, and I'm a Wemba Wemba and Gunditjmara woman. So it was very important, and it's been big. It's been getting responded to very well, and art can create change and give people a voice. So it's been really important.
Absolutely. So Glenda Nichols is one of the artists exhibiting at Sovereignty. Her intricate and artful possum skin cloaks won the 2015 Deadly Art Award. Nichols has attributed her weaving skills to her grandmother and mother. Why is it important to pass cultural knowledge on to the next generation?
I think, you know, I mean, there's the purpose of just, you know, like regenerating culture through the making of art and you know, material culture. But it's also because, you know, our people, you know, who were left of us in this state as Victorian Aboriginal people, you know, we're the survivors of genocide. So, you know, this work is so important because the knowledge that's passed on is so precious because of the damage that was done. So when we see it being recreated and inserted into these places and positioned in these places, it gives us, you know, hope that our future generations will know these stories and this knowledge, because there's knowledge embedded in the actual artworks themselves. Mm. So, you know, and you can't always explain that. You can't always put that on display, but it's there within the work. And, you know, and on a day like today, you know, and happy Sisters Day to all of you. This morning's been really inspiring listening, because I'm actually sick and I'm really disappointed that I can't get out and do some of the things I was invited to do today. But, you know, in the respect of self-care, and like Audre Lorde talks about, you know, it being self-care, not being self-indulgence, but self-preservation and political warfare, that's really important to me through art and women's activism, you know, as Aboriginal women, to keep having that voice in our work.
No, that's absolutely right. And just with your ideas, because I know I went to one of your Melbourne Uni talks a while back ago, and I remember, you know, I got the feeling that there was a lot of that you had an activist background. I could be wrong, but how do your ideas about social justice inform your practice?
And I have to say thank you, because you know, Hope, as a sister, you're a very
solid I'm sorry.
No,
you're good. Well, we forgot to
I'm lurking.
Introduce myself.
Hope is lurking in the background.
Well, anyway, I want to give Hope a shout out, because she's been such a solid, you know, ally sister. Coming to a lot of events that I'm involved in, and you know, that solidarity is so important for us.
Yeah.
As, you know, shared people of colour and sisters, and our trans siblings and all our siblings on the binary, like, we need to keep getting together, and that really drives my work. It's funny, I'm getting described as an activist, because I've never described myself in that way. I think it's one of the labels that you get ascribed, you know, when you're in this, you know, area. And I think, like a lot of the women that you see, the Lakota women and the women at the NAIDAPL, you know, pipeline, they talk about themselves as protectors. And for me, I see Aboriginal women activists and matriarchs as protectors, because, you know, we're looking after culture and looking after people and country. But it definitely comes from my matriarch. So all the way from my great-great-grandmother, Papa, to my great-grandmother, Nanny Nancy, and to my grandmother, Rosie, and my mother, Margie, like, these are women that I have seen physically fight people when they have to. I've seen them verbally fight white people when they have to, name racism. My great-grandmother was spat on by white schoolboys as she walked down the streets of Echuca, this country town we grew up on, which is on Yorta Yorta country. And my mother would never, ever let people get away with racism. You know, I've telling my kids recently a story where I've been in the car with my mother chasing a white woman who used my brother. We followed her in a car to her house for my mother to drag her. You know, so my mother, grandmother, they're fierce women, you know.
The stories I can tell you about my own mother and my grandmother as well. And it's interesting, because they don't call themselves activists as well.
No.
They just do, and they just are. So, and I think they'd shy away from that label as well.
They do. Like, they don't assume anything, and they don't say that they're leaders either.
Yeah.
You know, these are all white. That's all settler terms trying to describe us, because that's what they do. That's what the system does. It tries to describe us all the time. And, you know, we know who we are.
It's all about creating boundaries, creating like little frontiers, or around identities and so on. I was at your, I think this was a year and a half ago, I think.
Yeah.
I was at a talk that you did at Melbourne Uni, and me and a bunch of my sister girls, we were in the first row. And I remember you did a lot of, you referenced a lot of Solange, and especially her album that had come out, A Seat at the Table. So Beyoncé's Lemonade album celebrated black and black female, Beyoncé's Lemonade album celebrated black womanhood and black female friendships, among other wonderful things. Mm. How are female friendships sites of radical resistance?
Sorry, what was the last bit? How?
Yeah, so how are female friendships sites of radical resistance? How are female friendships, I guess, radical?
Oh, I mean, to me, everything. That's life for me. Like, that's... I would not be where I am, you know... Right now, I mean, I have the privilege, like one of the previous panelists was saying, of, you know, being a cis straight woman, and I'm actually in a patriarchal, you know, marriage situation with a settler, so I'm very aware of my privileges, and I'm very aware of sometimes the contradictory position that places me in, that I'm in the struggle in my own house, you know, as well. So that's our blackness. My Aboriginality, my husband's non-Aboriginality, is a reality for us that we have to work through.
Exactly.
You know, and he's a solid ally. But
yeah.
That's still reality. And sometimes that reality is in your friendships and in your work circles. And you have to find sisters that are willing to decolonize their solidarity. And for people that don't have it yet, get Claire Land's book, Dr. Claire Land, who's a fantastic white solid ally of ours.
Right.
And she talks about decolonizing solidarity. And sometimes your friends need to do that, or people that you think are friends, but, you know, aren't aware of their own, you know, racisms that are taking place. But my Aboriginal sisters and sisters of colour that I get to see and work with around Footscray, especially through Footscray Community Arts Centre, give me a sense of well-being, a sense of unconditional love and support. And if it wasn't for the women in my life, you know, I just wouldn't be here. They helped me through every crisis I've had. That includes mental health. Like, I live with mental health, so that's a daily survival for me as well. And I'm really proud to talk about that because it helps other people talk about it. But just that, you know, there's a beauty and a spark and an understanding that you have with your sisters that is just between you. Sometimes you don't even have to say the words. You just understand.
Yes. You just, I guess they can read it off your face. There's no need for words. You're just like, okay, I get you, sis. I hear you loud and clear. Well, I think because we're short on time, I would love to ask you your relationship with the West. But could you just tell us quickly your, I guess, your role in the Woman in the West exhibition?
Oh, look, I was very a bit shocked, actually, to be told that I'd been nominated to be one of the women honoured in that exhibition. Those things don't sit well with me. I get really uncomfortable and a bit embarrassed. But I, when I thought about it and I discussed it with my family, that, you know, I should accept it because it honours the other women in the struggle. And so, look, it's this fantastic initiative. It's the very first, Australia's first museum called Her Place. So it's a women's museum. And so they have this exhibition. They had one previously that celebrates women. And this one is about the Western suburbs, and especially how, you know, that women in the West, you know, we get sidelined due to, you know, who we are, class struggles, you know, gentrification happening here, and access to education. And I'm a proud Westie, you know, born here on Kulin country. And I've worked at Victoria University on and off since 1998, and doing my PhD at Vic Uni in Footscray, and raising my family here, you know. So I love this place, and I won't let anyone put Footscray down because it's very easy
neither
to
will
be
I
a
neither
Melbourne's will. Joke, you know.
Yeah.
And that's absolute snobbery. That's just a classist, you know, rubbish approach. And this exhibition is so brilliant, and especially because it's got some sisters that I really respect, Melba Marginson, who's a refugee and immigrant advocate, and Halima Muhammad, a Somali community leader. They're women I've been honoured to be on panels with before. And the author, Alice Pung, her book, Unpolished Gem, about Footscray, I just love. So yeah, I'm a bit humbled by it and, excited too. Mm.
Sounds like a great lineup of women. Thank you so much for being on the show, Paola. Could you quickly tell us the dates for the exhibition? Because I don't think that was mentioned.
So, look, it's open now. They opened it yesterday, so it was open in time for International Women's Day. It runs till the 31st of March. It's free. It's open Monday to Friday from 9 till 5. And it's at Metro West in Footscray, which is in the Nicholson. It's in the Footscray Mall.
Yep.
It's easy to get to from public transport, close to Footscray Station. And there's an amazing public program that includes a panel on decolonising feminism with Claire Land, and just talking about the limitations, you know, that there's more to, you know, feminism for black women and women of colour and trans women than just, you know, liberal white feminism.
Yeah. absolutely. Yeah. No, thank you for saying that. Enjoy your day, and I hope you get to your kids.
I will. I'll get him off to school in a minute. But thank you so much.
No worries.
Love and respect to you and all the sisters out there and our trans sisters and everyone beyond the binary.
Hey, back at you, sis.
Thanks, Paola.
Thank you.
This song's for you.
Bye.
So we've come to the end of our show. I wish we had more time, but there's more awesome things happening today. Next, we're going to have Stick Together with Annie McLaughlin. Please look at the programming for International Women's Day. I wish every day was like this, really. There's going to be so many shows. And Lalitha's show this morning was really amazing. And you can catch all of this. I think it might be podcast. And we'll have all of the information from our speakers as well as Whiskey's details on the updated Wednesday breakfast page. Thank you all, everybody. A big thank you to all of our guests. Thank you to Paola Bella, whom we just spoke with just now. But just to recap the show, we first spoke to Margarita Vindich. After that, we spoke to DJ Miss Risk. And then we spoke with Pillar Darling and Idil Ali, and of course finished up with Paola Bella. And so, you know, by our powers combined, breakfast powers combined, we put together a really great show. What did everybody else think?
Wonderful.
I had a really good time.
Yeah. I feel like fantastic.
And everything off. Thank you to our live in-studio audience members. Thank you so much for waking up early and coming. A fabulous day to you all. Thank you so much to Whiskey Houston for coming in and playing such awesome music. You can catch Whiskey later tonight at the Unity concert. Is there any last words for any...
Yeah, can we thank Juliet and Michael for being the backup in the studio for us?
Exactly. And a shout out to Alex as well, controlling the other half of the buttons. we survived.
And Reese in the studio quietly doing his work.
Exactly.
And our social media gurus, Bessie.
Catch you all next week at our respective shows, and Lali on Friday. Happy, I guess, you know, International Women's Day.
You've been listening to 3CR Breakfast, community news and independent current affairs.
I'm Claire Byrne.
Adrian Wong.
Diana Beaumont.
Kaden Nick.
Rihanna Whitson.
Ron and Dean.
Katie White.
The uranium mining area.
Shake-up of the Australian Defence Force.
It's women who seem to miss out yet again.
Coal-fired power station.
Carbon price mechanism.
Ongoing protests in Egypt.
Some current affairs goodness for you this morning.
3CR's Tuesday Breakfast Show.
Wednesday Breakfast.
Thursday Breakfast.
Friday Breakfast.
We've got a massive show today.
Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m. on 3CR Digital, 855 on the AM dial, and streaming live at 3cr.org.au.